Welcome to The Art of Growth, where we use the Enneagram and the best tools we can find to help you grow. And in this series, we are talking about connection and belonging and community. And today we want to talk a bit about why we resist connection and how to receive. We are really excited about this series. And this year, we are going to have panels and group coaching around this topic of connection, because we see this as a time to improve our relationships. If you go to theartofgrowth.org right now and you'd be interested in the group coaching on this topic, the group coaching that starts in March is not up yet, but you can join the wait list and you will get an email as soon as it goes live. And if you're new here, welcome. It's awesome to have you. You can check out more of our work at theartofgrowth.org. That's the place to sign up for our newsletter or take a free Enneagram test or instincts test. And my name is Jim Zartman, and today Joel Hubbard and I are going to be continuing in this series. And if you have questions, you are welcome to reach out to us there or on Instagram, where we are posting a lot of extra videos on this content, which is just Art of Growth. But for now, let's jump in with today's topic.
So we said in the previous podcast that there are ways we try to get our needs met in relationship with other people. You called it a bid for connection. Mm. And so there's something we're trying to get in relationship with other people. And I think it's important for us to be able to know that and to name that. Mm. Because if you don't know it, you can't do anything about it. It's still coming through. And the difficulty is being vulnerable and naming it, saying, here's what I'm doing to get connection. And I think that's important, because then you can move from trying to get your needs met in ways that are unaware to you, or ways that you are more aware of, but you're still doing it in a particular manner that's not healthy for the other person, or it doesn't really meet what you actually need. And I find that when people are going around trying to get their needs met, almost never does it work. It's not ever satisfying, however that is. So I think in terms of how to get to places where we genuinely feel satisfied, like we feel that sense of love and connection with other people, and the need gets quiet, is this rhythm of giving and receiving. It's this rhythm of how do I both extend myself in connection to other people, and then how do I receive the connection other people are trying to make with me? And I think in that process of both, I'm reaching out and doing, particularly, by the way, when it is not your starting point, you're not naturally maybe a person that is vulnerable and open and willing to share about themselves with somebody else. Mm-hmm. And so when you do that, you're doing that as a gift to them, to the other person. Because you don't feel like it's a gift to you by opening up and being vulnerable. And yet, strangely enough, you feel better. So I'm convinced that in that, like, I'm doing and I'm releasing and I'm giving and I'm with somebody, let's say I'm with them and I'm listening to them talk about stuff that has zero interest to my type 7 brain, and I'm there listening on and they're droning on, or they're repeating the same thing but in various different ways, and I'm getting bored. You know, and I can also say, hey, look, can we talk about and move on to something else? I have that, you know, that right as well within good connection with people. But if I can stay and extend that as a gift to them, the strange thing about it is my need gets quiet. My angst gets quieter. So that's what I'm saying. I think in this sort of giving and receiving rhythm, that's where it's in the mix of that connection happens. So when someone's trying to make a bid, or someone's trying to do something for me, and I judge or dismiss that, or I don't even see it, but they're doing something as love towards me, and I open up my heart and I take it in. It's a practice I have. So this sort of like happenstance thing, it's like a real practice. Like I imagine my heart open up, I breathe in and I take in what they've done for me. And that practice of doing that does produce that sense of connection. At first, it's an exercise that it's like, well, this is not easy. But this is how I know I'm connected. It's like I feel less needy of other things, because I think everything we chase in life, external to us, like money, a prestige, success, whatever it is we're pursuing, I think that is the need for connection. We're chasing these things because we don't feel love. We don't feel connected to other people. We don't feel connected to ourselves. We don't feel connected to the divine, the universe. And so, once again, I think it's in that space of the giving and the receiving that we find ourselves more connected.
Yeah. You used a phrase a second ago. You said extending yourself in order to have that connection. There is an extension, and some of us really feel that extension because we're talking about this receiving thing, but the resisting component is really present for so many of us. I know that I've resisted connection because it feels vulnerable. It feels like, well, I don't want to be a burden. I don't want to be needy. I know others who, you know, they tell you, well, I'm an introvert, so I keep to myself more. And you may need a little bit less, but every human needs connection. And there's even a protective element in that. Like, I'm keeping myself from any kind of disappointment. I'm keeping myself from certain kinds of pain. So there's a resisting, because that phrase, extending yourself, no, it does. That's what it feels like.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And there's a resistance, and I'll name the resistance I feel. So by way of example, I can feel the resistance kick in when someone says, hey, can I help you? Can I do something for you?
Mm-hmm.
There's this like thing that comes up within me.
Nope.
I'm good. Yeah. Totally. It's a weird thing. It's like, and it happens all the time. It's not something that happens occasionally. It's every single day.
Yeah.
My starting point when it comes to someone else trying to do something for me is usually I'm good. I got this.
Have you taken apart or analyzed why you think that is?
Oh, I think I do know in part why. I don't think I'm still learning, but yeah. I definitely have insight to, I don't want to feel like I owe anybody anything. Mm. I also don't want to feel controlled. I don't like somebody that like inside my space that feels consuming in some sense. It feels like I'm losing my sense of who I am in the midst of this. I get all into my head, like how much do I do? How much do I not? There's a lot of complication there for me. But yeah, I think it's very much a thing of control. I mean, I don't want to be controlled. I don't want to be indebted to you. And
I don't know what their agenda is. Is there an expectation?
That's a big one too.
That's a huge one. Yeah. For me, it's like, is there some kind of an expectation that you're going to have if you do this thing for me that I don't really need?
Right.
Sure. It'd be
right,
nice.
Right.
Wait. And then I'll catch myself. No, but you know, you want to be able to receive and welcome this, but what about this? And I can, when we were talking in the last episode about, you know, connection, protection, whenever someone offers something like that to me.
Yeah.
It is like a pinball machine going back and forth between connection and protection in my brain instantly. It's like ding, 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 back and forth.
Yeah.
And I can see myself being like, I want to be able to accept it. I'm so resistant.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, because when we did that little, we did a little survey on Instagram, like, what's the hardest thing to say? Like, I'm sorry. We had several different phrases, but the one that was far and away, the leader
that's
was,
right. I remember that.
I need help.
Yeah.
That was the number one thing that people did not want to say.
Yeah. Mine definitely is that thing of like, I don't want to owe anything. I feel like, you know, you might have expectations. Same thing as what you just said. But that's a strong resistance, I think, for a lot of folks is that, you know, we're like receiving help.
Well, when we're talking about, again, the ego is wired not for connection, but for protection. Mm-hmm. So whenever there's this idea of receiving, we are going to have to sort of go through the gauntlet of ego protection. We're going to have to like see those things firing.
Yeah.
And I think it may take for some of us a lot more time to unpack this. The question, how are you at receiving, is one I ask in almost every typing interview I do. Because I'm very curious to how people respond to that concept. I'm very curious as to people being like, I'm okay with this. Or they'll bring up, well, I'm totally fine when people compliment me, or I'm totally fine with gifts. And then some people are me are like, or receiving what? So in the last week, I had all three responses like that. And you get these very different responses, but I'm always very curious. And like, this, how are you at receiving? Because I know there's something about this capacity to receive. And you talk a lot about this, but I think most of us, we'd rather give. that whole, like, it's better to give than receive. Like, I think to a certain extent, we believe that on an emotional level, because it is a vulnerable state to be in, to receive.
Yeah.
Receiving is a vulnerable state.
Yeah. And I've written elsewhere that vulnerability is the path to love. You cannot love or be loved without it, because it's an opening up of the self. And I think that that's also where connection takes place. Mm. Whether in giving or receiving, opening up the self is necessary. Because you're talking about giving is much easier. Yeah, it is. But when we open up our hearts in the giving process, that's a scarier thing to do. I'll give you an example. Like someone says, you know, I might thank somebody for doing something for me. Like, thank you so much. And then, it's nothing. Yeah. You know, I was going in that direction anyway. So if it was, you know, no problem to give you a ride here. It's like, okay, your heart is closed when you do that. It's a dismissal.
So you're willing to give, but then you're self-protective on this receiving
on the receiving part. Yeah.
Giving didn't make you feel as vulnerable as even you saying thank you to them for giving.
That's right. And opening your heart in the giving. Like, I'm giving because I really genuinely love this person.
Yeah.
That's a vulnerable place to be. Instead of like, well, of course, because they needed the ride.
Right.
They needed the ride, but you wanted to. Now, in some cases, you don't. You're just doing it because it's like, well, they need the ride. I don't really want to do it, but it is part of my values to be this kind of a person, right? So that you choose that. So you're not feeling the warmth and the love coming from your heart. That's okay.
But you did it.
But you did it. If you then lean into your heart center to go, but this is part of my values because I really care to be this kind of person, can I now open up my heart in love towards other people, towards the world? It may not look like, you know, a particular, you know, way that you might think. Like, it's not about gushing over people, but it is about opening the heart towards others in love and whatever expression that looks like. But I think that is a challenge for all of us, is how do I do that? Because that's also where connection takes place, is in the opening up of the heart to one another.
Yeah. We brought up a few different things when we were talking about this as far as what we're resisting. It may be that we're resisting the mundane. It could come from a place of insecurity. This is something I want to talk about for a quick second, but this idea of avoiding equals.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That was something when we were brainstorming this, we talked about it. I was like, oh, that's a really big thing. Because I've seen that come up for a lot, where to be in a relationship with an equal is very uncomfortable for some people, because they want to look up to people and like, oh, I have the hero up here, right?
Yep.
Like your podcast a couple weeks ago. Or I've got people that I'm helping from a benevolent place.
Yeah.
Out of the goodness of my heart, right? But that puts me almost in a power position.
Oh, it does.
And I think one of the reasons that a lot of us resist receiving is because we don't want to be put into that position.
Yeah.
Right? Because it feels like a power imbalance. But there's something about having equals is incredibly powerful. And I remember the moment I realized, like, I resist that, because I always want everyone to be equals. I want everyone to be treated like equals. But in the back of my mind, I don't want anyone over me.
Yeah.
And I don't want anyone to have, like, positional over me.
Oh, yeah.
Or towards me.
There's a line in the series we're watching where that's exactly the sort of the president. He doesn't have a title, but he's definitely in charge. And he wants a completely flat structure. Nobody has titles. And it's so funny because he's taken so much pride in that. And then the antagonist in the movie says, well, that's easy to say because you're still in charge. So you can do that. You can do whatever you want. You can call it whatever you want, but you're still in charge. And you're still influencing everybody. And it was such a good moment of, like, realization that it's easy to do the sort of, like, I'm benevolently in charge. I'm giving to you. I want an equal. Yeah. You know, I want you to be everybody to be equals. But everybody still experiences you as being a little higher, a little bit more in power.
You're the one granting this.
Because you're granting it. You're giving it to them. You're just such a kind dictator, you know. It is something that I found to be so true. I felt so exposed when I first saw that in myself. Was I can either look up to somebody who I think is amazing, they're a hero kind of figure, or I look down. But I very seldom looked across. and in connection with people. I think that's where connection takes place the best. But I found myself yesterday doing that. We have a spiritual group that we meet every other week with. And I told myself going into this that I would not be the savior-like figure, you know, in the archetypes. I told myself I wouldn't do that. Right. And yesterday I watched it and I felt it. I was like, I've been here, you know, giving and serving and guiding, but where am I in the receptivity piece? Where am I? Mm. Why am I resisting at this moment receiving?
Yeah.
You know, so I took a deep breath and I pulled back and I went back to that, you know, to that place. But it's so easy for me to go back to the resistance of receiving from equals. You know, I receive from the hero figure and I give to those that I perceive are beneath me, but I don't do, you know, I don't have that in that sense of a cross. So I like that, the sort of like above, below, and then a cross.
But it's really healthy to have people that are equals, because we've talked about this when you're having that exchange with someone where there is that equality, that's where ego actually disappears. So we've often said you don't see a personality really present with two people that are in essence connecting, because they're connecting at this like soul level, this connection level, that those things are just faded to the background. They're not trying to prove the confirmation of the story of their Enneagram type. You know, those things are not dominating the narrative. They sort of recede to the background. Mm-hmm. And you just are. And now we're in exchange. It's like a beautiful thing, because it just feels like a place of safety.
Yeah.
And I think, again, the ego is more for protection than connection. And so when you're in a real place of connection, that's why the ego fades, because it feels safe.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're trying to look for, is we're trying to find a place that is safe, a wise network of people.
And I think it's an approach that you decide on, not so much that there are structures where, you know, there are people that you look up to that are heroes and that are people that are beneath you. I think it's been more of a shift of looking at people as there's both giving and receiving in all of these relationships.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I might have something to contribute to you today, but you'll have something to contribute to me tomorrow.
Yeah.
And so in that sense, it stops having these fixed roles of like, oh, that person's the sort of hero figure. These people are the victims. And I'm one of the heroes. So I'm in the process of saving people. We get stuck in these roles.
Oh, gosh.
And I'll tell you, that's why there's so much loneliness for heroes. There's so much loneliness for people in top level leaderships of anything, you know.
Right.
And they talk about this a lot. Like, if you're at the very top, how lonely
it is.
It's
lonely at the top.
Yeah. And I do think that's because, well, in large parts, the systems and the structures, they do kind of, the setting definitely helps with that, unfortunately. But if there's a shift towards a more vulnerable and a more open and receptive approach, you know, you stop resisting receiving from people for fear again. And that role, for me, the fear was, if I show that I am receiving from them, then now they have power over me.
Mm.
And I didn't want that.
Right.
It wasn't that I wanted power over them. I just didn't want to feel like they have power over me, or that they could dismiss me. That was another fear. It's like, dismiss my contribution in the future because I showed a moment of vulnerability and weakness and was able to, you know, kind of take in and receive from other people. And so therefore now I have no value because clearly I'm not the hero figure anymore. And I think that's a big fear, but that's also what keeps from the connection happening for people, you know, in roles of leadership.
Well, but there's also the charging toward the top can be a proxy fulfillment for 100%. Actually having connection.
100%. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's very hard
to have. Yeah.
It's hard to have equals. So if I put myself into this kind of position, or I can get myself in that position, then I'm sort of surrounded by what feels like connection, even if it really isn't.
Yeah.
And then you hit this point where you realize it. Like, this is a reason they talk about how so many actors, they have to go right into therapy after winning an Oscar, because it's like, well, I thought this would bring a certain sense of like meaning.
Yeah.
And it doesn't. I remember so clearly sitting in the movie theater. I had scored a film and I was going to the actual movie theater to watch the film for the first time and seeing my name pop up, music by Jim Zartman, and then it fading away and being like, oh, that's it. Then I realized like all the best moments were me connecting with the director of the film. And it was we did this thing together. And I had I remember, working landscaping job in middle school, like listening to film scores, being like, how cool would it be to do a film score? And it was like 25 years later that to have that experience and just being like, oh, all along, it's the people. So like this study that we referred to, this happiness study that Harvard did, has been doing for 85 years. Like at the end of your life, the relationships really are all you've got. There's a Sarah Groves lyric that says that. We quote that at home a lot. At the end of your life, your relationships are all you got. Like those are the pieces that are the most sustainable in terms of their value. When people talk about like their satisfaction, their happiness level. But one of the quotes from that show is they said that social fitness is a lot like physical fitness. It requires time, intention. You have to actually apply yourself to the social skills in order to have good relationships. It's no different.
It's so very true. Coaching this couple, I saw that happen right in front of me, where one is giving something of love and the other one is not taking it in. So I stopped the person. I said, see what just happened? This person expressed something to you and you weren't mean about it, but you just didn't take it in. I feel the protectiveness.
The defensiveness was still up.
It was still there. It's like, you may not be able to right now. That's okay. I just, getting to the point of being able to name it. Can you name it? Right now, I'm feeling too defended to even take that in. That's adequate. That's completely adequate.
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah. That itself leads to connection, right? So because then it's like compassion. Oh, right. Okay, you're there. I gotcha, right?
Right. That's really good.
It does take intentionality. It does take practice and effort to get to that point of receptivity.
Because sometimes when someone is showing you love, it feels like a violation of the confirmation you're seeking.
Oh, yeah.
And therefore, I get defensive and try to shut down someone who is really genuinely giving from a place of love, because it confronts the belief that I have about how relationships really work.
So we need to give an example, because we've said that a couple of times.
Okay.
Give an example of that from a type.
I mean, I can do it for myself real quick.
Okay.
I think that's sure. So easy. Is if I genuinely believe, which I have fought with in my life, that I need to be prepared to be abandoned, that I need to be tough because you're probably going to have to stand on your own, that at any given point in time, people could switch sides on you. It is very hard to genuinely experience sometimes a bid for connection, a genuine connection, because I'm very aware that a loss is possible and almost guaranteed. Even with someone, I'm going to love this person, know this person for my entire life. Well, at some point they're going to die, or I'm going to die. Mm. But really what I'm worried about is someday they're going to die and I'm going to experience so much pain at the loss, or I'm going to get betrayed, or whatever it's going to happen. So therefore it's very hard to genuinely accept, because it's violating what I'm looking for is the confirmation that I'm going to be alone at some point. I need to be prepared for pain. I need to be prepared to stand on my own. Therefore, you violating this, I'm getting defensive against the very gift you're trying to give.
Yeah.
Like this is like deep stuff. Like you really got to, if you're hearing this and you're going like, what in the world are you talking about? Like if you can try and learn to name that for yourself.
Yes.
It's very difficult to see that, to be able to acknowledge that I have a belief about the way relationships work. I look for confirmation. And sometimes when someone is genuinely trying to show me love, I can push against it because you're violating the confirmation I'm seeking.
Yeah, which almost that the confirmation we're all seeking is that we are abandoned, that we are alone, that we are...
Exiled.
Exiled, exactly. So clear to me right now in this moment of like, that shows up in almost every, I can see that in every type. The six that is sure that they're not going to get the support that they need. And so what happens when the support is there? They don't see it, right? That's the filter. The filter doesn't allow it in.
Or they question it.
Oh yeah. Question it.
Poke at it.
I was joking with one of them. I don't know if it was a six or I forget which type it was, but I was joking with one of them. I said, it doesn't matter how many times the opposite is true. It doesn't matter. You have 1,000 of them, but you'll remember the one time that it was true.
Right.
And
because it stuck out more because it confirmed.
Because it confirmed the thing that you believed.
Yeah.
And it's a predisposition. I mean, it starts early. So it's predisposition. It's before belief has formed. It's like, you know, as a nine, I'm predisposed to believing that I'm going to feel disconnection. I'm going to be disconnected from others. It's going to happen. So what do you seek? You seek evidence of that. And why would you? You're thinking like, why would you seek that? Because that gives you a sense of certainty and control over the over reality.
Yes.
If your reality is, that's what happens in this world. Right? And the one story or the two stories or the three stories that confirm that against the many others that go against it, it gives you a sense of certainty. That's how the world works. Now I'm prepared. Now I can handle it. Because my type knows how to deal with that, right? So my type knows how to deal with disconnection as a nine. What do? Well, I just make sure that I'm not the source of conflict.
Yes.
Right.
And just a quick reminder to anyone who's like beating themselves up for doing this, like you are not choosing this.
No.
This is not something you are intentionally choosing to do. There's nothing wrong with you that this mechanism is going off. This is natural. Right. And neuroscientists actually, they tie it to a system in the brain called the RAS system. And the RAS system, it is designed to look for certain patterns. So essentially, it dictates what you say is important. So it's like, well, that's important. All these other stories that I experienced, those aren't as important. The one that confirms, that's what I pay the most attention to. That's where I give the most weight to, because that's what's going to keep me safe.
Mm-hmm.
And so the RAS system, that's basically your confirmation mechanism in the human brain that's saying, pay attention to this. This is important. This is what's relevant. So there's all this information coming at you, and that's the part of the system that's filtering to say, this is what's important.
Whatever message the seven would have picked up, or the two picks up, or the four picks up, won't work for the nine. It's not a thing that the nine would ever, like, you know, you imagine you have like an eight with a nine, and the eight says, you just confront, you deal with it, and then you create peace. Well, for the nine, that's like, no, that could not be, right?
Yeah.
Because again, the world has to function through the worldview of the nine, through the lens of the nine. It's normalizing to all of us that this is really difficult work because our brains are wired that way. And so now we're working against that wiring and we're taking in the data from other types to go, well, that's interesting that you see that the world very different than I do. It was funny being doing an eight and nine pairing the other day, and the eight says, well, I want peace too. But I don't think by avoiding things you're going to get to peace. I think you have to confront and deal with things, and then you can have peace.
Yep.
And it was so remarkable to see two opposite ways of going about peace. And I said to them, somewhere in the middle is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you kind of find it, right? It's neither one or the other. It's the ability to take in both and to one ask yourself that question, you know, is it time to engage? Is it time not to engage? But the confirmation, like you're saying, I think is just a thing we're all working against. And that's what prevents us from that deeper connection.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you bring up the eight and nine. And with the ones, it's like, if I'm good enough and do enough of the right things, then I'll have a sense of peace. And on the feelings wheel that people can see on our website in the store, you can download it for free. And I refer to it all the time with clients, is because they're showing me like the body types, you're trying to get to peace.
Mm-hmm.
But your methods for getting to peace are going to be very different, you know, for the hard types, you know, trying to get to love, but your methods to get there are going to look very different. And we have to navigate through this maze of self-protective mechanisms and confirmation mechanisms and these systems so that we can be like, okay, we asked this question. I would love people to write this question somewhere, so that they can be challenged by it, which was, how would you act if you were safe with people?
That's the best question ever. It is the single best question to ask. I love that. Because that forces you into the more relaxed part of the brain, the thriving brain, as opposed to the surviving brain. So that pushes you outside the ego.
We're giving you the solution now, folks. Like, yeah, we're telling you all these protective mechanisms, observe them, but then stop and ask yourself a question. And I'm a deep believer that you want to change your life, like, ask the right questions.
The right question, yeah.
And this is one of the best questions you can ask is, how would you act
if
you were safe with people?
Yeah. And the best people we've learned that from, I've learned it from, is watching people do that. Like, people that I know, there's one guy that I knew, he's a black guy who said to me, Joel, as a black man, I have a choice. I can either continue to believe that people are afraid of me in a space, or I can move forward and act like it's not true and create a different outcome. And that was his choice. Now, this isn't the answer this is not the answer, folks, to anything to do with racism.
Right.
What that speaks to is such a powerful example of that there are real resistances in the world we will all face, right? Whether it's, you know, some kind of racism or some kind of, you know, gender thing, whatever the resistance is that we're going to face, those are real. They're out there. But then there's, how do we respond to those things, to those resistances ourselves? And I think in establishing connection, we either hunker down in those sort of like, well, this is reality and this is how people are, or we move towards connection and acting as if, you know, those things aren't true. I know when I act out of that, and I've watched myself when I've acted out of, hey, I'm in a good place and I'm not going to take the things that you say as like a personal attack on me, but I'm going to act as if we are good. That when I act as if we are good, it tends to produce something really different. You know, there's connection that tends to take place there.
Yeah, that's so good. So if we close with that question, this, how would you act if you were safe with people? If the self-fulfilling prophecy you are living into is, I can create good community around me, and good community tends to beget more good community. You know, when you get a few healthy people around you that, like, we grow together, we bring the best out of each other, you can really start to see, I think, some of these mechanisms changing. Mm-hmm. You start to have a better filter for safe people. You start to have a better filter for, are we going to be able to have that kind of exchange that is healthy, that is mutually beneficial, that isn't self-protective, it isn't transactional that we were talking about. The ego is faded away and there is essence on essence exchange, and we feel very safe and we feel very good about it. And I think it's a great question to keep at the forefront of our mind, because obviously there are some people in the world that aren't safe. We all have experiences where we've been hurt by people, but those people are not, I would go as far as say they're not the norm, and they're not, you know, your whole life experiences. You know, we do have to pay attention to, what are we tuning into? What are we drawn to? Because some of us are even drawn towards the people who will confirm that. Mm-hmm. You know, there's lots of data on that. But if I want to be safe with people and if I want that connection, I want to start behaving in a way that allows those doors to open. Mm-hmm.
You know? And I think about a story I heard yesterday from a type two. So this is very consistent with a lot of twos, where she said, you know, I went to the supermarket the other day, the grocery store. And she said, and there was this guy who was standing there and waiting to order, I think it was like cold cuts or something. And he was clearly frustrated because there were a lot of people in front of him. And so he's just standing there and he's huffing and puffing. And she says, and I could see that. He was kind of an awkward guy. And so she said, I went over to him and I said, hey, how are you doing? And he had some response like, well, I would be doing better if this freaking line would get you. So some dismissive response like that. And she's like, she didn't take that. She was like, I'm going to lean in and I'm going to make his day better. And so she started chit-chatting with him. And pretty soon they're talking about cats. Both of them love cats. And all of a sudden he's laughing and smiling. Wow. And so she says, you know, his whole disposition shifted and changed. Okay? Simple act of a reaching out, you know, and twos do that quite well. So again, we all we learn from each other, the wisdom of connections within all types, just not within our our fixated ego self. And that to me is one of the things I've learned a lot from twos is how you act if you, as you're saying, if you act as if you act as if you're already safe, what does that produce? Yeah. Produces something like this. Or you continue to look at people like that and they fall into certain categories in your mind. And these are people that are whatever, but they're dismissed in your mind. They're just like, these are the crazy people. These are the people that are, you know, too self-centered. These
are moralizing and pathologizing, like you say.
Moralizing, pathologizing them.
Right.
And I think that that's created camps. It's created political divides. It's created religious divides. It's created all sorts. But when we move towards connection, we stop seeing these divides as real. They're just fabricated by our egos. Mm. The truth is that love, connection, is far more powerful if we lean into it and far more effective. And a lot of these divisions just start to fall off.
Yeah.
And now we're talking as people, as humans, as folks who struggle, who have hopes, who have dreams, who have painful experiences. And we are in it in that moment together. And that's the withness we've talked about with the stances that I think is tremendously helpful towards connection.
Which we're actually going to talk about more in the next episode when we get into how do you actually create connection? Mm. What are some skills? Like I said, social fitness, it requires attention just like physical fitness does. And so we're going to talk about some of the skills in the next episode here.
So thank you so much for listening. If you have questions or feel there's things we should have covered that we didn't, please shoot us an email and we can either respond there or do an episode of Q&A at the end of the series, whatever would be helpful. And I would love to hear about any discussions that it's having with the people you're trying to improve connection with. And I think this episode in particular could be really interesting for people who you want to connect with and you could have a really interesting discussion around the ways that you resist connection and what helps you when people try to connect with you. But if you do have questions, reach out at theartofgrowth.org. Make sure you are subscribed. And if you leave us a review, it really helps people find the show. It's a huge help to us. We appreciate it every time they come through. But for now, my friends, may you deeply know that you were made for connection, that your needs are good, and it is good to desire connection with those around you. It is good when you feel that sense internally that you want to reach out to someone. And may you evaluate with honesty and grace any ways that you resist, or at times even take, and it just passes right through you because you don't absorb the gift that someone is giving you. And may you ponder the times you've been able to receive, to see what secrets they have for you, to learn and grow in this area. Grace and growth, my friends.